This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Long after a war has ended, landmines remain in place, killing and maiming civilians. Landmines used to be defensive battlefield weapons, but now in many smaller conflicts and civil wars, landmines are used to terrorize civilians and control their movements. The Cambodian Civil War is believed to be the first conflict in which more civilians were killed by mines than by any other weapon. One Cambodian out of every 236 has lost a limb. My guest Eric Stover is the executive director of Physicians for Human Rights. He headed the first comprehensive study of the medical and social consequences of landmines in Cambodia. His group is calling for a global ban on the manufacture and export of landmines. Today, the UN General Assembly adopted a non-binding resolution banning the export of anti-personnel landmines. The Clinton administration supported the ban and urged other countries to support it as well. Stover was last in Cambodia investigating landmines in June.
They're everywhere in Cambodia and in other countries such as Angola and northern Somalia. I think one of the most devastating things about the indiscriminate use of landmines in Cambodia by all the factions in the civil war, which ended in 1991, was that they used them against the people. I mean, these mines were used not only to control land so people wouldn't get access to it, but also to control the movement of people. And we know one faction in particular, the Khmer Rouge, they specifically used mines to disrupt agriculture and transport, to sort of buckle the government at its knees. And finally, they used mines to terrorize the population. There are frequently cases where we heard, and there were witnesses too, where situations where the Khmer Rouge would surround a village and put mines around the village and then literally send artillery shells into the center of the village so people fled out through the minefields.
How are mine wounds different than other wounds?
Well, what we found in our trips to a number of hospitals throughout the world where there are landmine victims or patients is that you see that in gunshot wounds, while all physical trauma is terrible, the gunshot wounds and artillery wounds tend to be somewhat clear wounds. They penetrate through this tissue and exit, and they may leave some infection, but not a great amount, compared to the type of wound that landmines cause. And the problem here is that anti-personnel mines are designed to maim, and they act on a pressure system where you step on the mine and it releases an explosion, which then drives not only the various parts of the mines, which may be metal fragments, or maybe if they're plastic coated, or soil and tissue or splintered bone, but it is forced up into the leg or across the body. So you, when the patient is brought in to the hospital, number one, they're going to require require some sort of surgery, normally amputation. We find in comparison to other war-related wounds, that surgery is going to be more costly, it's going to take more time, it's going to require twice the amount of blood that other war wounds will require. And we also find that landmine patients stay in hospital longer and require more assistance than other victims of war wounds.
I know you did a survey of mine victims in Cambodia. Were there typical stories of how civilians hit landmines?
What the patterns we saw were basically this, that what one has to understand in most of the countries infested with landmines, and particularly in Cambodia, is that these are developing, agrarian, impoverished countries where you live by your muscle power. In Cambodia, for example, the rhythm of life is the rhythm of the rice culture. There's the flooding of the rice paddies, then there's the planting and the replanting and the harvesting. So in the family unit in the village, everyone needs to be out working in the fields. And what we found was as people were wandering, whether they were going to work or whether young boys were taking their cattle out to graze, they were out collecting firewood, they'd step on a mine and then either be killed. Many of them we know have been killed, and those that are fortunate enough make it to hospital. But what happens then, the effect is once they're released from hospital, they and return to their families, many of them have now become a burden to their families because they can't go out and work any longer, or they can't work at the same rate they did before. I think one of the saddest things that I saw in Cambodia was a case in an area in Mongol Barai, which is heavily infested, and I became acquainted with a case there of a young child, no more than 7 years old, who had been playing near his village and stepped on a mine and was paraplegic as a result. And he was brought to the hospital by his family. He was treated as best he could. He would survive, but he would be paraplegic for the rest of his life. And the parents left him there, and they abandoned him at the hospital. The doctors didn't know what to do. For 3 or 4 months, the parents didn't return. Now, this is a sacrilege. Anyone who's been to a developing country, to abandon a child is a sacrilege. I mean, you do not do this. And in any culture, but particularly in the developing world. Well, finally, the family did return, but it just shows they didn't know what to do. They didn't know how they would provide for this child. So you get a sense of the devastation it caused.
Is there a growing part of the population now that is helpless because they are amputees and they're not able to get artificial limbs and adequate medical treatment?
Yes, very definitely. This is, again, the sort of multiplying effect of landmines. Not only do they put the stress on surgical care and extended time in hospital, but once the landmine victim leaves, they're going to require an artificial limb. And the problem is in many of these countries, they're unable to produce enough limbs. And also if you take, for example, a child of the age of 10, if that child steps on a mine, they're going to require an artificial limb. And then if that child lives to be 40 or 50 years old, he or she is going to need 25 artificial limbs because you need to change them as with the growth of the child. And if each of those limbs cost $125, that child in his or her lifetime will spend some $3,500 on artificial limbs and may never make more than between $800 and $1,000 a year. So it's a tremendous stress, not only on the family, but on the economic situation in the country of people going back to work when they can't because they simply don't have the same possibilities they had before the injuries.
Do a lot of the landmine victims end up begging on the streets?
Oh, yes. It's one of the problems in Cambodia is many people, they find that they can't work in their villages, and particularly young men, and they drift to the city, and they take up begging. It's a problem in Phnom Penh, in the capital, where you see groups of soldiers who've lost limbs, who actually carry out petty thefts and so on. And everywhere you go, you'll see begging around all the rather expensive and posh hotels. There are landmine victims begging. I mean, it is something that you'll never forget to see the extent that the damage that this weapon has caused.
What kind of precautions did you have to take as you traveled through Cambodia?
Well, our precautions are simply to know where we're going, to check ahead of time.
But if you know where you're going, but you don't know where the landmines are, how much of a help is that?
Well, I don't think that the real danger to us in actually going into the hospital, there's not really a danger there on the main roads. It's of course there's always that problem, but once you get out into the countryside, then you're running into a situation where you'll never know where they are. I would mention, though, my organization, Physicians for Human Rights, has been working in Yugoslavia over the last year with the War Crimes Commission to carry out exhumations of the mass graves associated with war crimes there. And it's come home to us very clearly the menace of landmines in former Yugoslavia, because before we can go into any area begin looking for these graves, which are, of course, unmarked, we have to have demining teams. And we'll be delayed days while they'll go in and simply go over with metal detectors to try and find landmines. We also know that the use of landmines in former Yugoslavia is one where they're being used to stop the flow of relief supplies and the movement of people out of conflict zones.
Which groups are most responsible for laying down the landmines?
That is, everyone gets to share, I think, in that particular nightmare. There's none, we have no evidence to show that anyone is doing more damage than others. The problem is, as in Cambodia and most ethnic conflicts and low-intensity civil conflicts, is you have a country riddled literally with ceasefire lines. And each pocket or area where there is a particular faction, they will then use mines to guard that area. And when they leave, they often don't pick them up. So it's every faction shares the blame in Yugoslavia and also in Cambodia. Although I think in Cambodia, clearly the manner in which the Khmer Rouge used landmines was to terrorize.
In the former Yugoslavia, is it similar to Cambodia in that the landmines are mostly in rural parts?
Oh, yes. They're clearly, in fact, more so. Well, they are very much like in Cambodia. I mean, they're scattered over rural areas. However, they tend, I don't think, at this point at least, we're not seeing the level of the high intensity of the problem in Yugoslavia like we've seen in Cambodia, because they are restricted to those ceasefire lines. Now, what the problem is that mines love movement, and the minute there is some sort of ceasefire and a peace agreement, you're going to have the mass movement of people, and that's where we're probably going to see the injuries among the civilian population rise considerably.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Eric Stover. He's the executive director of Physicians for Human Rights, which is calling for an international ban on the use of landmines. We'll be right back. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Eric Stover, executive director of Physicians for Human Rights. We're talking about landmines. His group is calling for an international ban on their use. How visible is a landmine once it's been set? And I wonder if any of your travels you have come across one that's been sitting there waiting for somebody to step on it.
Well, probably the most vivid example was last June when I was in Cambodia, and along the one Highway 5, which one runs through the country, which is in many parts, most of it is just simply a dirt road, along the bridges there are still government troops that are there, and they put out mines every evening. And as we were driving through over one bridge, we stopped and started talking to some of the soldiers about their mine. Did they use mines? And they took us over and pointed to a pile, literally, of PMN, which are a Soviet-made mine, that are a little bigger than a hockey puck. And these are very common throughout Cambodia. Now, these were sitting right off to the right side of the road, and they were in a cluster of about four or five. There was not a soldier within 30 yards of where they were sitting. And as we stood there talking to them, they were picking them up and showing them to us. And these had been activated. You can pick them up as long as you don't hit the pressure plate. And then they would set them down. And as we walked away, we watched as children and dogs literally ran by these mines along the road. And all one of them had to do is take a step a yard to the right, and they would have been blown up. Also, they pointed out to us where they had put out tripwires in the evenings or for nighttime, so there wouldn't be access. And they told us that there had been at least one person killed within the last month. Another incident that was particularly alarming, and it'll give you an idea of how durable these landmines are. The end of my trip in June, I went to visit the head of the UN demining effort there, a major with the New Zealand Army, and he had on his desk a fragment of a anti-personnel mine, which is a type of mine that are called scatterables. They actually can be dropped from aircraft and do not detonate when they hit the ground, but when someone steps on them, they do. And this mine fragment that he had on his desk, he said, well, it had only been 3 days before that a group of children in a village nearby, young children, had found this mine, had picked it up, and were playing a game of tossing it back and forth in a circle until it finally blew up. One of the children dropped it. Two of the children were killed, and the three others were seriously wounded. This mine was a U.S.-made anti-personnel mine that had been dropped during the aerial bombings or aerial movement over Cambodia in 1974 and 1975. So here we were 20 years later, and they were still finding mines of this sort and killing and wounding children.
What's the state-of-the-art way to go about demining now?
Well, the state-of-the-art way of demining is primitive. It is today, in most of the developing countries, still a method which is by using a prod, which is simply a 12-inch prod, and a man or deminer will stay in front of, with a mine detector, will move along an area, and when he or she finds a mine, will then step back, and their colleague will come forward, usually on their stomach, an inch forward, and prod until they can actually expose the mine. And then they'll move on and keep down the line until they can find as many mines as they can in a day. Then at the end of the day, all of the mines are linked up with a common explosive and detonated at once. But what happens here is, even though this, that you may have a situation where, as I remember a case in Cambodia, of Halo Trust, a mine clearance team there, sent out and worked for 6 weeks. And they had been told by local army officials that there were probably 600 to 700 mines in this area. They went and worked for 6 weeks, slowly prodding through the area, and they only turned up 4 mines. Now, it would have taken the same amount of time to find 600 as it would to find 4 or 5 mines in that area. So it's a very slow, painstaking process. And that's why it'll take many years in Cambodia and many years in Angola and all these other countries to finally lift them. Part of the problem is in the use of large machinery such as flails, which sort of pound the earth and destroy mines on contact. They often miss mines. And it's only by literally prodding every square inch or foot of the earth that you're going to find all of the mines and make the area clear.
How often can you see a mine if it's been planted someplace? Is it usually covered up or is it usually in the open?
Well, it depends on the types of mines. The pressure mines are usually camouflaged in some way, and they may be put under within 4 or 5 centimeters under the soil or a little deeper, or they may simply be placed in the grass. And what happens is over time and undergrowth grows over the mines and they're difficult to see. There is another type of mine known as the stake mine, and that is, though camouflaged, sticks up at least a foot above the ground and you can't see it, but it works on a tripwire mechanism, and the tripwire is very difficult to see. Oftentimes, even these mines will be used in trees, and the tripwires will be strung across the trees at about head level. There are also many pressure mines. There's a Japanese Type 72A mine, which is a very small mine, and it has an anti-tilt device. So even if it's left exposed, if someone comes along and actually touches the mine in any way and tilts it, there's a bead of mercury that runs and makes a contact, and it will explode.
Eric Stover is executive director of Physicians for Human Rights. That group collaborated with the Arms Project of Human Rights Watch on a new book called Landmines, A Deadly Legacy. Stephen Goose is Washington director of the Arms Project, which is also calling for a ban on landmines. He says one of the reasons for the global landmine crisis is that these weapons are accessible to poor countries and guerrilla groups.
More than anything else, it's because they're cheap and they're easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
We have discovered from our research that you can pick up Chinese landmines, for example, that are quite effective for about $3 per landmine. And these are fairly sophisticated plastic landmines that are hard to detect and that are very effective in blowing off people's feet and legs and arms.
How do the landmines of today compare to the mines that were used in, say, World War II?
A lot of the landmines that were used in World War II are still out there. first of all.
Right, and can still explode.
That's right.
Yeah.
There are still deaths every year in Poland and Libya and other places in Eastern and, for that matter, Western Europe, where landmines are still claiming victims. And a lot of the landmines that are being still produced today are not all that different from the technology of World War II. But having said that, there are also now very sophisticated mines. I mean, one of the very disturbing trends that we see with the global landmines crisis is the degree to which the mines that are being produced today are being made almost entirely of plastic. Some, indeed, are being made entirely of plastic, and these are extremely difficult to detect. They give the mine clearers tremendous problems.
So which countries are the biggest exporters of landmines? Is it the same countries that are the biggest manufacturers?
Yes, it is. We believe, again, looking over a number of years, that probably the former Soviet Union and China and Italy right at the top. What we're seeing with exports in particular is that a lot of developing nations are getting into the game. This is true both for production and export, that increasingly many third world nations are seeing this as a way of earning some foreign exchange dollars as well as getting involved in the international arms trade market in some way. So the countries like Pakistan and Egypt are now becoming important exporters. The same is true for Singapore. South Africa is likely to emerge as a major exporter now that it is having its embargoes lifted.
Are those countries that would be more difficult to discourage from exporting landmines?
Yes, they will be. There's no doubt that if you're going to have some kind of successful ban on landmines, it's going to have to be one that is a total ban. That is, that where both developed nations and developing nations come to believe that these weapons have to be treated as inhumane weapons of war. Otherwise, it will simply be a case of the third world nations seeing economic opportunities that have been abandoned by the developed world.
Stephen Goose is Washington director of the Arms Project of Human Rights Watch. That group has published a new book called Landmines, A Deadly Legacy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.